I'm Anna Sale, in for Leonard Lopate today. It's been over 40 years since the FDA approved the birth control pill for women, and despite decades of medical and social advancements, there's no comparable option for men. Research and funding for developing male contraception has been sporadic over the years, and occasionally a scientific paper on the male pill makes headlines, but not much else. Still, there are small groups of scientists who are very committed to the project. Joining us now to discuss the science and the politics surrounding the search for a male pill is Dr. Diana Blythe, Program Director of the Contraceptive Discovery and Development Branch at the National Institutes of Health, and I'm pleased to welcome her to our program today. Hello, Dr. Blythe.
Hello.
So I want to get right at the mechanism for what you look at when you look at male contraception. There are hormonal and non-hormonal methods for suppressing fertility in men. We can't trick a male body into thinking it's pregnant like we do with a pill for women. So what have researchers been looking at for men?
Well, it's actually a lot more similar to what happens in women than you might think. The progesterone analog that tricks the ovary into thinking it's pregnant also tricks the male body into thinking it has more testosterone on board than it needs. Huh. So it shuts down the hormones in the other organs that would normally stimulate the production of testosterone in the testes. So, and you need to have a very high amount of testosterone in the testes in order to get sperm production. So if you're taking a progestin analog, if a man is taking a progestin analog, it will shut down that local production. It will stop spermatogenesis. The problem is that it will also lower the blood levels of testosterone. So you have to replace that with another testosterone source. And by doing so, you maintain all the normal function, libido and ejaculation and muscle mass and everything you want to have, but you don't reestablish a very high concentration in the testes, so you don't restart sperm production.
So you change the location of testosterone in a male body.
You have it in the blood, but not the 100 times higher concentration in the testes that you need to make sperm. So, and the problem with the male pill is that we don't have a formulation of testosterone that's available in a pill yet. We're working on it, but we don't have that. So that's why you hear a lot about the gels, and there are injection methods, but not yet a method that's deliverable by a pill.
So as one question in, and we're already talking about messing and fiddling with testosterone levels in men, is it your sense that there's a demand for an oral contraception for men? The other options are condoms or vasectomy. Is there a demand for something else?
Well, I think there's a demand for something else, and we get a lot of feedback whenever an article is published from men who are very anxious to be able to have a method such as that. So I think there's a demand, but because we don't have a product out there right now, it's very hard to say for certain.
I see. So it's all based on speculation. Tell me what your thoughts are about why. I mean, it's been decades since there's been a female oral contraception. It focuses on the production of an egg, so it's one thing to focus on. It's a little more straightforward than focusing on production of sperm, where there's a lot more to watch, and the margin of error is very small. Is that part of the reason why it's taken so long for there to be male contraception?
Well, I think it's a misconception to think that you have to have zero sperm in order to have it work, because we're pretty sure, based on studies that have been done in China and smaller studies that have been done around the world, that if you just get down to a concentration below a million sperm per mil, which sounds like a lot, but that's enough to be fully contraceptive. So it's not that you have to get to absolutely zero sperm. For whatever reason, and one has to wonder why you need that many million sperm in order to have a successful fertilization event, just getting down to below a certain threshold will be sufficient.
So you've said the science is not there, so it's just not there yet for there to be a male oral contraception. Part of your work at the NIH is giving out grants for this kind of research. What's the level of interest in developing a male oral contraception from pharmaceutical companies?
Well, pharmaceutical companies, there were several that were involved years ago, but as they've merged with larger companies, they've taken their focus away from development of a male method. I'm not sure why, but all of the companies that have merged have also a large market share of female methods, and perhaps they feel it might be a zero-sum game. But you'd have to really ask them why they're not pursuing it. At the NIH, we are pursuing both hormonal and non-hormonal methods, and some of them will be oral, but in fact, some of them may be a long-acting method, which, at least for women, is a far more effective method than oral contraceptives are. And I don't know if that's commonly known, but for women, the long-acting methods, such as an IUD or an implant, are about 20 times more effective than the typical pregnancies that result from using an oral contraceptive pill.
So you say that there's interest in developing a long-term strategy for men, so it could just skip over the process of having a daily oral contraception that women have had for decades to deal with.
Sure. So hypothetically, if men had an implant that delivered progestin continuously, that would mean that the suppression was continuous, and then they could replace the testosterone either daily or, by some other long-term method, and that would maintain everything that they want to maintain, and their own sort of desire to maintain all of that would help them remember to take the pill. The part that would suppress would be something they wouldn't have to think about, and that would be an acceptable method, assuming that there weren't any intolerable side effects from the process.
Recently, Dr. Sabatino Ventura in Australia made headlines for his research that blocked a couple of proteins which control the movement of sperm. He described it to The Guardian as a plane taking off, but it has no passengers on it, that everything else is normal, but there's no passengers on the plane. Are you familiar with this work, and does it sound promising to you?
I am, and it does. And we have a number of other grants that are in the works that would look at either production of sperm from non-hormonal blocking or production of function, which is basically what you're talking about, that sperm have a long way to go from coming out of the ejaculation to getting to where they have to get. They have to bind to the wall of the fallopian tube for some period of time, and they basically wait for a signal from the egg to detach and swim toward the egg. So there are lots of places we could interrupt that would, if we can interrupt the function, that might be very effective. And there are a lot of studies, but because they are usually done in animals, it's a long road to getting from the animal studies to human studies. There has to be an incredible amount of safety data, because you're dealing not with people who have life-threatening diseases, but people who are very healthy. So you have to have a very high bar of safety.
I want to go back to the question of who's researching this and why. And you made the point that many drug companies that were looking into this already have a large market share of contraceptions that are marketed towards women, so they might not see a profit motive here. There's also the question of if it's just kind of culturally ingrained that making sure pregnancies are prevented is more the woman's responsibility. What do you say to that kind of suspicion?
Well, I think that there are a lot of men who would like to be able to control their own fertility regardless of whether they're in a relationship. There are a lot of couples who, for whatever reason, the woman can't take hormonal methods and would like her partner to take responsibility, and the partners are willing to, but they don't necessarily have any options. But in older men, the percentage of men in couples who undergo vasectomy is quite large. If they had another alternative that might be reversible, they probably would choose that.
So is the status quo right now, there are fewer people researching this and headed towards the science that would enable a daily male contraception, or has it been a relatively small community of researchers who have been plugging along?
I think it's a relatively small community of researchers, but over the years we have implemented some additional grant programs that people can apply to, and that has increased the number of investigators and the number of opportunities that are being explored, particularly on the non-hormonal side. So I would say the numbers are increasing. It's still a long way off because of that safety bar, but it's a very exciting area of scientific focus, in my opinion.
And exciting because it enables couples to have more options in terms of how they want to control their family planning decisions.
Well, couples and also the other half of the population.
Have you noticed the politics of this? I mean, we talk about contraception and funding for contraception. It's been a huge issue in the Affordable Care Act and the whether employers should be mandated to cover contraception. Does that kind of political debate about contraception trickle down to the NIH? Do you feel those debates in when you're looking at the available researchers, the available grants, do you feel that trickling down into your work?
Not so much for the male contraceptive side of things. I think that in that regard, people are generally excited about the opportunity to learn more about the process and how to control it. And so I would say that it doesn't really affect what we do.
So there is an interest, and it's just the time has not come yet.
I think the science is very challenging, but we are making strides, and I believe we will have a method in the not too distant future, but not too distant is a relative term, probably at least 10 years, because we have to go from success in the lab to success in humans.
I've been speaking with Dr. Diana Blythe of the National Institutes of Health about the long search for a male contraceptive pill. Thank you for joining us, Dr. Blythe.
You're very welcome.